It's Jenny and Bill with Simple Bath and Kitchen.
We know the world feels a little crazy sometimes, but your home, that should be your safe place.
A beautiful kitchen for your family, a bathroom that feels like your own private retreat.
At Simple Bath and Kitchen, we have a fine-tuned process that makes remodeling something that you can actually enjoy.
Because when everything outside is unpredictable,
your home should be exactly what you need it to be.
Visit us at simplebathandkitchen.com to regain your peace today.
We make it simple for you.
Off the ball, GAA.
And that's, I suppose, all what's so special about the club championships, you know, at the end of it all, because it's so personal. It's family names. And, you know, and we're talking about our Francie O'Briens, you know. There's a Francie O'Brien in Eastkey.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. You're listening to Off the Ball Breakfast,
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Yeah, it's Thursday's Off the Ball Breakfast. It's a mighty one, to be fair to eat. Ben Jacobs, the football journalist, will be on with us about 8:15, talk about last night's League Cup action, the AFCON, and tomorrow besides a few transfers doing the rounds too in the Premier League this weekend. Then, right, we had booked Matt Williams yesterday, anyway, 8:45. We're going to talk about Ardie Sevilla and these outrageous links possibly to Leinster, which Leinster reportedly said they had no interest in. And then we thought, well, maybe a bit of Champions Cup too, and Irish rugby, what you having yourself? And then last night, the bombshell, Scott Robertson departing as head coach of the All Blacks 2 years into a four-year deal. It'll probably dominate chat throughout the show. And then finally, 9:15, Simon Carr, the ex-tennis pro finalist in Ireland's fittest family recently, of course, the Carr family, great sporting family in Ireland. He'll be in studio to talk the Australian Open. The first slam of the year gets underway on Sunday. But what captivated the world yesterday, or some of the world anyway, was the one-point slam, where a coach walked away with $1 million after winning point after point matches. A millionaire from that. He's a coach, a local guy. His parents founded a tennis club in which he coaches. Lovely story. And people got really into this. I'm not alone in the studio today. If you want to get in touch, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. And if you're listening only now, but you'd like to see us, type in Off the Ball on YouTube, click on the thumbnail, and you'll see us. I just Googled there, how many Daras were born in Cavan? The exact number of people named Dara born in County Cavan is not publicly available in the census data, as official statistics generally track the total population demographics rather than the frequency of specific first names in a particular location. In other words, don't ask me stupid questions.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, there'll be a famous Dara added here one day, I'm sure. And that's the producer to my right, Dara Spinnaughton. Good morning. How are you?
Morning, Colm. Morning, Vinny.
We'll get to your thoughts on the breaking news imminently, but as you just hinted there, so we have another boy here, Vincent Pertz, who was an interim co-host last week, I believe.
Yes.
And has done such a good job at that, that the fans are calling for your permanent inclusion on the show.
Yeah.
And it can't be denied, really.
I think the transfer speculation, Colm, was that you were under a bit of pressure, but I think you've made a decent comeback yesterday.
Well, I came back Monday.
Still a bit of room to improvement.
Back on Monday.
Yeah, but, Monday, that's what I meant.
Yeah, but no, it's great to have you back. Super, because, right, there's loads to talk about here. We Troy Parrott getting a hat-trick, Vinny.
Yes.
Against Ajax. We had the League Cup semi-final, first leg of Stamford Bridge, Chelsea 2, Arsenal 3. And then we had the AFCON semi-final, so Senegal will play the host Morocco in the decider. And Morocco haven't won this tournament in about 50 years. Senegal won it in 2021. There were brutal semi-finals, the two of them. But we have our finals for the weekend. So we had enough. We had enough. But Dara, then this news drops.
Yeah.
Scott Robertson gone 20 months out from the next Rugby World Cup.
It's a bit mad. It's not very, doesn't feel like a New Zealand thing. They're normally the kind of the role models for having the house in order.
They've never sacked the manager officially on the men's side.
This is huge, really. We had the news yesterday that Ardie Sevilla was leading somewhat of a player revolt against the union, and there was reports that he was linked with Leinster. That was fairly quickly shut down by New Zealand themselves, and I think this news confirmed just that. The players won, essentially. and the coaching staff seem to be relieved of their duties. Scott Robertson obviously going first. I presume the rest of his coaching staff will go with him. It's mad news, really, like, because I think it's on the game pointing out there in the YouTube comments that he's 74% win rate. So this isn't based on results. This is based on environment issues that were cited, that it was to do with... Yeah, it seems like Scott Hansen was at the very centre of this, that a lot of the players, I've seen the word hate being thrown around, really did not like this guy. He came in with Scott Robertson when Robertson got the job initially from the Crusaders, and it's clearly not worked out. And I know Matthew kind of threw it out there that it's similar to the Manchester United situation.
Yeah.
In that they had this great coach, Steve Hansen, for so many years. And they're just trying to replicate that now, and they just can't do it.
It's funny that I just making notes there. Great institutions that I remember from maybe 10, 15 years ago. Mm. The All Blacks, right? So they would throw me legacy book in the bin, because everything the legacy book is about is anything but what's just gone on the last few days. Players, no dickhead rule, probably the one team that runs through it all.
Yeah,
Manchester United was the next. You must ask Quinny when he's next in. I put Munster in that. In terms of where the great sort of institute, I'm probably missing a few. That's the first three on my list so far. Like, if you think of the last 10, 15 years, that it almost felt like the All Blacks couldn't, of course they can lose games and not win a World Cup, but how far they've fallen from grace.
Yeah, it's not that long ago they smashed us in Chicago, and we were thinking, geez, they've got their
But that was a pre-highlight, wasn't it, for them in November? The other comparison of Manchester United is that they've sacked the head coach without a replacement lined up. So now we're in the realms of rumours.
Who's next?
Jamie Joseph, in charge of the New Zealand 15s, who came to Cork not long ago, seems to be the front runner. And there's some interesting ones then, because Munster would be worried about Clayton McMillan. Just got going there, and he could be called back. Would Joe Schmidt break the updated agreement with Australia? He's going to take charge of another three games. New Zealand's next game is in July. That will coincide with those three games for the Wallabies. Would he go home once and for all? Or would they reach out for Ronan O'Gara? They've never had a foreign coach.
You'd love them to go for O'Gara, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I'd love to see that. My only concern with that is that he was literally Scott Robertson's protege as a coach. So I find it unlikely that they'll just take him in after firing the man himself. But
if the players are this powerful, surely Joe Smith is the wrong fit in terms of his style. Like Joe, the impression we get is Joe's so regimental and so structured.
He was in there recently. Like, he was only in there as an assistant coach during the last World Cup. And that was, they didn't win the World Cup, but it was success in general. They played quite well, and it was a very close final, and they had a man sent off. So it was small margins in that final. So I don't think, I would love to know how New Zealand fans would feel about him, but I don't imagine you'd hate to see him coming.
Let me ask you this. From the Irish perspective, let's say, look at the Rugby World Cup. Is this a good or a bad thing that they've done?
For Ireland?
Yeah, just as one of our rivals.
That has to be a good thing. Has to be. It's just uncertainty, isn't it? Like,
I thought it was a bad thing, because then they're going to get someone who's going to get that
new manager. Maybe.
Like you say, Darryl, you make the point, and it was put to the New Zealand rugby chair, David Kirk. We're going to hear from him here imminently. And David Kirk said, well, that wasn't necessarily about the results. So he won 20 of the 27 games, Scott Robertson. Yeah. Not bad. But they're used to a 90% win rate, and they were up until 2020. It was more the trajectory. He repeatedly mentioned the word trajectory in this press conference.
Yeah.
Here are the highlights of those words he spoke.
The view of the high-performance team and of us generally was that the All Blacks are not on track in the way that we need them to be on track for the 2027 World Cup, and indeed for what will be a very demanding year in 2026 with the four matches against South Africa in rugby's greatest rivalry. So having reached that conclusion, we entered into discussions with the head coach of the All Blacks, and following those discussions we weren't convinced that the team was going to be back on track without changes, and we had further discussions with the head coach, and we've mutually agreed that he would step down from his post. And I really have a great deal of respect for for Scott Robertson. He has stepped down on the basis of what he believes and we believe is in the best interests of New Zealand rugby and of the team. And that's very typical of Scott, that he would do what he thought was right and best for the team.
Do you have someone in mind who you want to be the new head coach?
No one in mind, completely open. We're going to cast the net wide. We're going to get as many people as we can. We think that coaching the All Blacks is one of the, well, is the greatest rugby coaching role in the world. We're very hopeful we'll see plenty of highly qualified candidates.
Would the organisation be open to a foreigner coaching New Zealand?
We haven't had that discussion at the board yet, so it's not appropriate for me to preempt that.
And three losses, does that set a precedent in any way in the future that if you lose three times as All Blacks coach, that's your job gone?
No, I just come back to the word I've used a number of times, trajectory. It's not about point results at a particular point in time. It's about, is the team building, is the team setting itself up for future success? And can we see that, and can the players feel that, and do the players understand the journey that they're on, and are they happy with that journey?
Obviously they weren't. Yeah, that's New Zealand chair David Kirk,
yeah,
who presided over Scott Robertson's dismissal. He's only been in that position since February 2025, so it's a relatively new regime overall.
Mm.
You were sniggering through that a bit there with some of the words.
Yeah, the casting the net wide open and then kind of shutting down the idea of having a foreign manager.
Well, they need to coaches. Talk about it.
Yeah,
like
we'll have a chat about that. Yeah, it's, to be fair, like there is a wide range of New Zealander head coaches out there. Clayton McMillan's obviously on this side of the world. Jamie Joseph, Joe Schmidt we mentioned. But I don't know, like, they need a bit of stability, but I don't know where they're going to get that from. It is really similar to the Man United thing. It's like, they're trying to replicate this thing that they had, but there's more to it. Like, they don't have the same players. Mm-hmm. It's not the same group of players that it was in 2011, 2015. I've seen suggestions that Eddie Jones is in the running, Warren Gatland. That's definitely not the right route to take here. I don't think they need a vibes man. They need a good head coach, and I think that's Jamie Joseph. He's very best known to us for his dismantling of Ireland as a Japan head coach in 2019. But yeah, it's a funny one. You might be right in that maybe this is a good thing for New Zealand overall, but they're going to have to get it right next time.
Couple of things. 20 months out, like, from with a football background, like, where's the panic?
Yeah,
and there will be panic about that. That's like a little bit bizarre in one sense. I know you don't get to play as many games. Yeah. And second of all, like you've just said there, they need to get a good coaching. They had an outstanding coaching. Mm. But ultimately, are we getting into a war now where politics between players, what's above them, and coaches is getting in the way? What it sounds like to me is he's stuck to his principles.
Mm.
And not all coaches do that at different stages. He stuck to his principles and said he ain't for changing, and the players wanted something to change. And they've gone to the people above him. And yeah. He said, no, I'm not changing, and he's walked out.
Now, Kirk repeatedly insisted in that press conference that there was no player revolt. Absolutely none. But the player's opinion was canvassed about what was happening.
There was the review,
which was bombastic by all accounts.
I saw the word nasty used to describe it.
So we knew that this time yesterday, right? So we were talking about that.
Yeah.
Right. Now, did you think this would follow?
No, not this soon. No, I thought it would be kind of a more drawn out
scenario. Mean, drawn out would mean that he'd preside over the World Cup. So that's nearly two more years.
Yeah.
So they would have had to make the decision now, wouldn't they? Because you can't kind of sleepwalk into the next 2 years, which includes the World Cup.
Well, they kind of did that with Ian Foster as well. That was an issue.
Never seemed that content.
No. And I think he's a good. He was a good head coach.
Maybe they need the tension.
Yeah.
Maybe they need that creative butting of heads. Like, you know, Vinny, from the, like, if you use the football background here, like, you're kind of done and dusted, aren't you? If the players say they're not having you in a meeting.
Like,
I'm not saying you experienced that, but the feeling must be there in some way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You are. When there is a doubt, you're gone. And you know that yourself as well. There's another way of dealing it where the people above you back you to the hilt, and then you make changes. So you can win a certain amount of players back. I always say, if you take in soccer, you've got like ABC rule, okay? and you've got people who are A's, you've got eight people generally that are B's, and you've got two people are C's, right? So the C's are always the negative ones, no matter what happens. You won't change them. Mm-hmm. And if they become powerful, your A people in, that are B's all become C's. And if the two A's are really your strong characters in the restroom room, then you take your A people with you. Your two C people, as in they will always be there. And it's the same in every sports group, whether it's whether I've gone into in soccer or had a look at Gaelic teams, all of that stuff. There's always two or three people in every sort of 10 people that are the negative ones. Mm. And if they allow and they can fester those other people who float in the middle of everything,
okay,
you're gone. So if he had been back to the hilt by the by the people above him, of course you can turn any situation around. You may have to leave one or two big names out and go from there and start to rebuild. But they felt, obviously as a board, they felt, and he's stuck to his guns and said no. So he, it sounds like to me, reading from a manager's point of view, that he wasn't backed by his board, and he said, right, we need part ways.
Yeah. Reports suggest the senior players, including Stardust forward Ardie Tavey, were unhappy with the team's direction, with some threatening to walk away from the national team. So unhappy with the team's direction was the report from some of the players, which coincided with the words that Kirk used repeatedly in that press conference, trajectory. Just a fancier way to say the same thing that the players felt.
Yeah.
So therefore, you're right. I mean, like the I guess the board agreed with the players. So it was desperately wrong. But it's funny because like Scott Robertson, what he did with the Crusaders was monumental. Like Crusaders weren't winning anything. He took over and then they won everything repeatedly.
And he was highly thought of.
Look, one example that I just mentioned earlier, Ronan O'Gara, the way Ronan O'Gara would talk about Scott Robertson, and he was just one example of how most of the rugby world felt about this incredibly charismatic and charming guy. He spoke with us.
He did,
He spoke with Off the Ball. You could find it easily. And he looked at this very microphone cover and said, who are you? Off the Ball. Oh, yeah. And he brings you into his life. And he said, I can see why you'd play for this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And as Kirk said, quite damningly, really, it was like it's kind of very different managing the Crusaders versus managing the national side.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's quite a Stephen Kenny difference there, but obviously the pressure in some form was too much for certain people there.
Some of the reports I saw were that he stuck to a very similar kind of setup that he had with the Crusaders and wasn't prepared to change that. I think it can't be understated the negative role that Scott Hansen seems to have played in this.
Which we have heard. Yeah,
that the players really, really did not like him.
Which is
I think there was mentions of certain players not getting picked based on personality traits and different things like that that players didn't agree with.
Personality. Well, would that be your ABC thing?
Yeah, it's a little bit like, so as I said, the best way is for an outfield team in soccer to explain that to you. Like, you've got 10 outfield players, you'll always have two who will die for you. You've got A that will potentially die for you, but or six, should I say, that will cost you. And then you've got two who'll sort of, out of your 10, who, no matter what, will always be, you know, the food is never good enough, the bus seats are never comfortable. But so it's you always have that. And it's if you give the manager in any group a chance to cull them, then you have a chance. And it's a little bit like, that's why it does, there's so many similarities to Manchester United. Like,
yeah,
I mean, United either had to do what they've done or go all the way and back the manager for the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. If Robertson's win rate was in the high 80s/90s percentage wise, player persuasion would not have had much impact as it has with his now departed role, 74% win rate. Mm. So they're the standards you're talking about with the All Blacks. This is not a vintage New Zealand group.
No, like you'll remember the game, the rugby championship, they got absolutely smashed by South Africa.
They did.
Their biggest ever loss against them.
They weren't particularly great against Ireland in the game that they won. They had funny enough, the replacements that Scott Robertson made really made a difference
in the final
quarter of that match.
Yeah, I was impressed with them that day. I was also not impressed by ourselves. So yeah, there was a bit of that going on. But then the game with England, they got dominated. They obviously had a game against Wales, which they won pretty handily, but overall, yeah, it wasn't going the way it should be or the way you should expect a New Zealand team to be performing, but it is just so rash. It happened so quickly. And it, like I said, I did expect it to be drawn out a little bit more.
Was it the right call?
Hmm?
Was it the right call?
Yeah, if you're going to get rid of him, definitely to do it now. But the right call, I would say that they don't want to make the same mistake as they did in the last World Cup, but I don't think that was really a mistake because they did quite well. Maybe they could have done better, but like if the players aren't on side with him.
I mean, that eternal review must have been crazy, Vinny, because they don't have a replacement like
that. Yeah, so that,
they have to get rid of him.
My problem with it is then if the player revolt is that sort of strong and ultimately that means the manager loses his job, then who picks the next manager? The players?
I know.
No, but like you can't have your cake and eat it.
No, they canvassed opinion after a 2-year review.
Yeah, but
you know, this like, wasn't. Sophia did not. It wasn't sitting as part of the recruitment group.
Yeah, but the players' opinion and the noise we're hearing around what the players are thinking
a factor in
is
it,
a huge
sure.
factor in this.
Yeah. It has,
huge
yeah.
factor.
It's opened
because
the door,
if it was just results column, this would have happened a couple of months ago and it would have been happening over time. There's that review that they've done and what the players have said, and they've obviously gone to the coach and said, we need you to change this and this. And he said, no, I'm not changing it. And he's backed himself because he is an outstanding coach and he'll go and prove that again.
Yeah. But he's going to be deeply hurt from his own nation, you know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Now, he's a fluent French speaker. It was time in Perpignan.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, okay.
So he could go there. It's an option. He could swap it, Raj.
Or win a World Cup with Australia in 4 years' time.
Yeah, imagine that. The ultimate two fingers when he's lifting that trophy. But I imagine there's a deep hurt there. From what you know of the story, Vinny, do you have sympathy for Scott Robertson from, you know, the shared job he once had?
It sounds like he's backed himself and said, no, I'm not going to listen to you, and I believe what I do is the right way. And ultimately, he's going to work in rugby for a long, long time because of what he's done at the Crusaders. And like that, I think he'll have... If I was a head coach under pressure of a top, top club around the world, I'd be a little bit worried. Mm. Like, he'll have his pick of the top jobs when they come available. And that's the difference when you're in a real position of strength, where other coaches might hang in a little bit or say, oh, do you know what? Okay, I'll change that a little bit because...
Yeah.
And that's the first sign of weakness. People on the outside would say, but you've got to do that as well if you need to for your career's sake. But I feel like he's made the other decision.
Yeah, there's a great documentary in this because there's so much we don't know as of right now.
Well, there's a number of coaches have left already, isn't there?
Yeah, a couple of coaches already the assistants.
Under his tenure, yeah. I'm sure we only have a little bit of the reality of it. No mention of Arsenal again. Wonder what would have happened if United or Liverpool had beaten Chelsea. You can blame the New Zealand Rugby Board for that, you know, because they probably would have led. I mean, this happened so late in the day that the Scott Robertson departure news is not on the morning newspapers. It's not there. So the back of the Irish Independent, Munster ready to swoop for Delan.
Yeah.
As France exit looms. This is Alton Delan of La Rochelle, potentially going to Munster.
Yeah.
McAleese told by GA Chiefs 2027 integration unrealistic, which is a huge body blow.
Not very surprising.
That is absolutely correct. O'Byrne calls on sports chiefs to make a stand for Palestine. And then, out there, dear listener and viewer, Zubastars. Magic Martin makes it advantage Arsenal as Sanchez clangers, ruins Liam Rossignol's big night, his home debut as Chelsea boss. At Stamford Bridge. He's having himself, isn't he, Liam Rossignol?
Yeah, he's fairly confident, to be fair.
Do you like that?
Yeah, no, a lot of time for that. Just because it's very easy under Abramovich, they would have appointed, I don't know who, but they got one of the biggest names. And it's okay that one of the sort of lesser names has been given an opportunity because they've tried all of those different bits and pieces. So he's right to back himself. There's questions, has he got enough miles in the clock to manage at this level? But we're going to find out.
Yeah.
I like the Chelsea experiment. I really do. I look at their squad.
In terms of signing a bunch of different players.
Like, put you this way, from so many people, and Colm included, like the love of Manchester United in this country. Chelsea are so much further down the road than Manchester United. They are one or two, three players away from getting after Arsenal.
Do you think?
And then, a goalkeeper, at least one, if not two, centre halves. Like Pedro, his form last year, if they get it back, the talent of the fullbacks is as good as anything in the league.
Yeah.
Like in midfield, you think of that midfield three, Caicedo, Cole Palmer at his best, and Enzo.
Yeah.
That is as good as anything in the league. They've got flair at different stages in the wide areas. Garnacho is up and down, but so a lot of wingers. The young lad,
Estefel. Yeah, he's quality.
It's a real thing. Neto, like when you start seeing all of that together, you see, do you know what? They've got the makings of a top class side. Mm. But goalkeeping, that is a huge error. Whether it was Kelleher or anybody else, they should have made
the
a change.
Goal, yeah.
Yeah, and they probably, like, when you look at someone like Rudiger, Real Madrid, at the falling out a little bit, apparently he's available. If they brought in Rudiger back to the club,
bring him back,
wow. Like, if you think of the game last night, they've scored two goals against Arsenal, hung on at different stages, but defensively they were so poor, goalkeeper so poor, that they're so close to getting it right.
Yeah.
And the rest could be history with a club like that team. You compare that to Manchester United, there's nowhere near the level, like the excitement in those names I've mentioned, that midfield, all of them things. There's nowhere near the chalk and cheese column.
Depressing. Yes, Vincent.
Go back to Arsenal for a second. What about, like, the squad depth they have?
Ridiculous, yeah.
Like Ben White coming in, a bit of talk about him, but look on the bench, like, Eze doesn't even come on. They've got Jesus, I think, can make a huge difference.
Yeah. He's been quite good, actually, coming off the bench. Eze's struggling for minutes.
Yeah.
Like, he's barely playing. But, like, when he does, he makes an impact, but they don't need him,
I don't know if they anticipated Leandro Trossard becoming so important this season. And he's going to be expendable.
Ridiculous.
But Trossard. And now Madueke. And Eze can't get into the team. Liam Singer is the seventh consecutive Chelsea manager to fail to win their first home game in charge. Mm. Well, for Arteta, he's the first manager to go unbeaten in 8 consecutive away games against Chelsea. That brings you back to Arsene Wenger 2005. The thing about Arsenal, right, people say we don't talk about them. We actually do. We should talk about them a fair bit.
We do, yeah.
To do with Mikel Arteta, right, and how he's very good and would he be great. And you've nailed it, Vinny, because that's where I was going with this. It was their squad depth. I looked at their bench last night and I was like, I'm almost more attracted to the bench.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
A bomb squad.
You know, as Eddie Jones labelled the finishers, isn't it? Rather than substitutes. Yeah. And they have a bunch of them, Arsenal. But they were just superior in every way. Now, they twice led by 2 goals and they should have put this game, this tie, to bed, really. So Mourinho has that volley, which, funny enough, was very well saved by Robert Sanchez.
Yeah, it was a really good save.
And then Gabriel, I think, misses a sitter at the back post, a header, which he bounces, very similar to the way Ben White finished his goal, heads it over. Now, that first Arsenal goal, right, on the face of it, looked quite similar.
Very similar.
To Antoine Semenyo's disallowed goal the night before. I think the only thing was Chelsea player, it was Achebang, wasn't looking at the ball.
Never, and he was never going to clear that ball.
So never looked at the ball, so therefore it's ruled out. Nevertheless, Vinny, it goes to VAR. Now, the improvement last night was that it was quick. This is only took seconds, really. The night before was 5 minutes and 40 seconds. Too long for a pop song on radio. Very long.
Mm.
And we had just followed the FA Cup at the weekend, which was a joy to watch when nothing's going to VAR. And why is that the case? Because every single goal that's scored now, every single goal,
you celebrate.
You celebrate it and you question it a little bit in the back of your mind. This might be ruled out for something.
Oh, sorry, pre the FA Cup.
In the VAR world versus what happened in the FA Cup. Mm. Macclesfield scored those goals against Crystal Palace. Once, as you say, the referee points back to the centre circle, it's on. We can celebrate. Nothing will change now.
I'd love to know how many people, so say you're a diehard Liverpool or Manchester United fan or Arsenal fan, when a goal is scored, do you jump, if you're watching at home, do you jump off your sofa the way you did 10 years ago? Mm, or do you go? Because you're even worried about your own wife or your own family slagging you at this stage.
Making a fool of yourself. Yeah.
And next of all, 2 minutes later, sitting down. I'd love to know how many people actually, because the big difference in the FA Cup the weekend was once the ref pointed to the halfway line, the goal was given within reason. And it was like a split second decision, where now I think vast majority of people are questioning, and I think you're sucking the life out of football. And I heard a bit of Owen Doyle last night talking about VAR, and I think VAR on its own is one part of the problem. I think when you add in the length of time for throw-ins, for corners, for reviews, that I know we're getting 8 and 9 minutes gone, and what people aren't seeing is
it must be so frustrating for the top teams. Or, you know, a lot of coaches will say, we've got to find a rhythm. Mm. So when you're getting at somebody and you're having a little bit of sustained pressure and all of a sudden the opposition get a corner. And I tell you what I do, Colm. I go in on the goalkeeper and I push him before the corner's taken, just to give myself a team of breather. Because the ref will come in, he'll then speak to the two of us.
Yeah.
So you've got another 30 seconds there. I'm just chilling now. So all these little things are being allowed happen in the game. You won't get booked for the little push, but the ref will come in and go, I'm watching you.
Yeah.
The other thing is, he's watching me, if Colm's the goalkeeper, really close. I don't foul him, but allow somebody else at the back post get away with a little small little drag back. So there's so many dark arts going on that.
Yeah.
We need to try and control it, because when you add all of these things up, we're sucking the life out of the game.
Corners are a mess as well themselves. Mm. Like, what's going on in the box? It's just, there's no, it's just cry at the keeper now, isn't it? And hold on to your man. It's a bit like, not that the corners were ever too exciting, but it's, you know, it's either it's a good ball in and it's a goal, or it's just cleared away.
We're going back to Chelsea goal conceded last night. The freedom Ben White gets in one sense, or the way he's able to score from 3 or 4 yards, you'd have to wonder, or were Chelsea prepared for that? Like, you'd imagine Rossignol is so detailed guy, but there has to be a way of stopping these things, and there has to be more thought in it, because they've become a crucial part of the game.
Vinny, I don't get your Chelsea spiel, says Chris Fox.
Yeah.
Chelsea are behind Man United in the league in the middle of January, so how are they much closer to Arsenal than Man United are?
Because I get that, okay? And I can throw stuff out there willing to be criticised about it. But if Rossignol gets this team right and is the right man for the job, their potential as a team with that quality of player and one or two signings is further down the road than Manchester United. In terms of the squad, so if United want to play with out and out wingers again, they could do it at Garnacho. They could do it with Neto. Mm-hmm. They could do it Esteva. You know, they could do it all of these type of players.
If Jamie Gittins, who has it got going?
Put it this way, and always being injured, but would Pedro be better up front than Sesko?
João Pedro.
In terms of his form at Brighton, I know he's been injured.
I don't know, Pedro's not a great goal scorer. You know, at least Sesko's starting to score goals a bit.
Okay. So, where's United's biggest problem? Probably centre midfield?
Yeah, it has been for years.
Yeah. So, Chelsea's midfield with Cole Palmer, okay, Fernandes, Grange, you can toss a coin on the two of them.
But the two
behind them are way ahead. Endo, Fernandes and Caicedo are way ahead of anything United
when
have.
When they're fit and play together, amazing. Yeah. They have Andre Santos they've thrown in there as well now.
Okay, so when it comes to fullbacks, would you take Chelsea's fullbacks over Manchester United?
Oh yeah, I take absolutely, most of the Premier League over United's fullbacks.
So you're going to take their fullbacks and you're going to take their midfielders. Mm. You're going to take their out-and-out wingers potentially.
So why are United ahead of them in the league?
Because the mismanagement of both teams, there's not like, I mean, Chelsea have been mismanaged, and the recruitment department there need as in one sense they've done a lot of good things in young players and different things, and I know it's crazy, I get it, and it's a mad project in terms of the amount of money they've spent on their squad is ridiculous. You know, 40 million, 50 million for this lad, and they don't get involved. But they haven't got the right key decisions right. And one is a centre half and a goalkeeper there could be, like, if you think of what Liverpool did with Alisson all them years ago and Van Dijk, if you add the two of them to the Chelsea team, it's potentially almost there. You know, that's the difference where United is 5 and 6 players, and because they've allowed the previous manager sign to a point of a sort of 3-4-3 system, that if Carrick comes in and decides to play 4-3-3, I'm not sure really suits all of the players. Like, we've seen Fernandes playing left wing at different stages already because of him and Cunha, who plays in them left wing positions. And Bermo is probably, like, he can play in the wing, but he likes that sort of 3-4-3 system, like him and Cunha narrow. So there's a lot of refixing to be done at Manchester United. I don't think Chelsea are going to, I hope I didn't suggest they're going to
be able to compete with Arsenal over the next sort of 6 months or 12 months, but they're certainly closer in terms of squad and understanding of a squad or the development of a great team. They're definitely closer to Manchester United, in my view.
If you take away Kepa Arrizabalaga and Ben White last night, and you throw back in Raya and probably Calafiori when he's fit, that's pretty much Arsenal at their strongest last night, right? So what is it about them under Arteta now? Is it literally, Vinny, that he just improved the squad? He's kept the same style of play, the same system. He's just improved the personnel.
Yeah.
And now finally they look like they're going to actually win something.
So the great thing about this Arsenal team is Trossard's a great example of it, where a year ago, 18 months ago, 2 years ago, Trossard was just grand footballer. What a real Irish saying, but just grand at Brighton, wasn't he? He was like, yeah.
Well, at Brighton he was good. He got his move to Arsenal.
But he's become a great player potentially at Arsenal. Mm. He's going to become a league winner. But if Trossard is just below his levels, and whether that's a training, whether that's the people with the GPS units, all of that stuff, in you come Martinelli, in you come Eze off that side. And it's the same. Like, we haven't, Saka is just being okay, and we haven't even noticed it, because somebody else comes in and does the mode. They've got magic. Declan Rice, he was able to leave out a couple of weeks ago because of a small injury, and the team isn't affected. So he's at it. That's why I compare sort of that Chelsea team in terms of strength and depth in key positions. Arsenal have that, but they're levels above, particularly in goalkeeper and centre half. So, like, Colin, you touched on it. Look who came off the bench from last night. Martinelli, Marino, Guy Havertz and Jesus, who didn't come off, Eze, Norgaard, Miles Lewis-Skelly, and you touched on Calafiori as well. Wow.
Norgaard is a great example as well. Like, he's such a decent Premier League midfielder. It's a great squad signing. I love a good player that, like, he'll play, like, you know, 10 or 15 Premier League games a season where he may start. That's probably even too many, and then he'll play the cup games for you, and he's a good player. Like,
that's what they've done best, is sign players within the league as well, players that know the league. Norgaard,
yeah, it's good.
Eze,
it's good.
Madueke,
I think they have a bit of personality, and that's the big difference.
And people that listen to me every so often might remember me saying good players can come great players in great teams, right?
Yeah.
So there's lots of good players. So Trossard has become a great player.
Has he?
In a great team.
Is he in great form?
Yeah, and the goals, that is the importance of his. No, I don't think he's a great, like, I don't think if Manchester United sign Trossard tomorrow, they're turning into a potential league winning team. I don't think, do you know what I mean? All of these players aren't making you, but Jordan Henderson became a great player, Liverpool, in a great team.
Raya was a good goalkeeper coming in, and now he's probably the best in the league.
Yeah, I didn't think Raya was going to step up to this level of he's a great goalkeeper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's a great goalkeeper. Now, the one position, right, I was thinking that when you were talking, Vinny, I was like, would they swap any of their players for any others in the Premier League? And maybe Erling Haaland? Because Victor Gyökeres, him, I don't know, it hasn't got going for him, really. And very interesting goal celebration, I found. I'm not really too much into it. He looked a bit annoyed, right? So he gets, maybe he was like, well, this is a patronizing goal I've just scored. Yeah, he had a clanger, and I'm like, I've sly tackled the ball into the net because I'm desperate for a goal. And he almost needs his teammates to get him going, to be like, come on, celebrate.
You do your little math.
This will be the start of your time here at Arsenal. And there feels like a reluctance with him that he hasn't quite shown his personality yet. Now, I don't know if he's just not good enough for that level of player around him at Arsenal, or if we're just waiting for him to explode. Because if he was to do the latter, if he was to be the player that Sean Maguire talked to us about when he was on the best players play, was like, there's a guy called Victor Gyökeres in Coventry a few years ago. He's sensational, lad. So we kind of, I heard about him, The guy at Sporting. If he's like that, forget about everyone else. Is that the one thing still? They've been crying for a centre-forward for years and years now. He still scores the odd goal, but he doesn't look comfortable.
Yeah. Obviously, they'd be better with Haaland or somebody of an outstanding goal scoring, but there's obviously, and we've seen it with Guy Havertz, or with Havertz at different stages for Arteta, he likes his forward to do other things as well. So he's part of a team. Now, Ogres isn't doing the same thing Havertz did. Like, Havertz basically played as a false nine.
Yeah.
So there's different bits and pieces. And that's why I said Jesus would be a huge part of the second half of the season, I think.
Yeah.
Because of his experience of winning the league, and being around winning dressing rooms, but also at different stages.
And for me, that's the difference with this Arsenal team now, is there's big moments in so many players that I think there might be a big moment for Ocarez at some stage where it's nil all and he gets the winner for them.
Yeah.
But it's okay if he doesn't, because Rice will go and do something magic, or Trossard will do something magic.
Eze comes off the bench,
or
Eze
or Martinelli does something.
Zubimendi.
Sorry, I was going to bring him up.
Zubimendi.
What a player he is.
Yeah.
Great goal.
The way he took the composure to say that goal. And look, Yacra's got himself a very simple assist for that as well, which was good.
But there's a lesson in, isn't there, in one sense? Arteta has had enough time to do this. I think if he failed now, if he failed now, that's the gas part. It'd be disastrous.
It's mad. This month he's 6 years in charge of Arsenal, which is an eternity in modern football.
Yeah, it is.
I think someone mentioned Gabriel Jesus there in the comments, and maybe he's a symbol of just how Arteta himself has improved and how the squad has got better too. Is I remember, Vinny, when they signed Jesus, I think they signed them with Alexander Zinchenko from Manchester City. And I was thinking to myself, well, geez, that's what Pep Guardiola thinks of these two lads. He was going to send them to a potential title rival.
Yeah.
I remember Jesus' debut for Arsenal, I think was at Cedars Park against Crystal Palace, and he was by far and away the best player for Arsenal. He carried himself with so much confidence that he was like, I'm a step above the rest of you because I've been playing under Pep. Fast forward a few years later, injuries aside, Jesus is just a squad player now.
Yeah,
you know he's probably on the bench. And that's how much they've improved.
He's an important part, isn't
and
he?
He's really important. He's not necessarily diminished that much, but that's the level of quality that Arsenal have improved with. I mean, it's theirs to lose in every sense of the word, all of it now, because they look like the outstanding team in the country by a distance.
Do you think those signings are there for a project? Like, will a lot of them stay over the next couple of seasons?
It's a good age profile.
If they don't win the league, because of Zubimendi hanging around.
Well, all right, if Arsenal don't win the league from this position, is it a catastrophe?
Yeah, absolutely.
So if it's a catastrophe leads to, I don't know if we're ever going to win this.
Yeah, question. That's what I mean.
And they might lose one or two. I would doubt it. I've heard a lot of people say, and I'm the biggest doubter of Arteta winning the league, right? But I have heard people say it's this season or nothing. But why is that the case? There's no timeline on this, is there?
Oh, there is. If he doesn't win it this season, I think that the failure of that would be off the charts. I think Arsenal then have to go and say, we've got the best players, we need to go and get the best manager. And that would mean doing something almost un-Arsenal-like. And even though they had Wenger for so many years, but he became this iconic manager.
Yeah.
I think they'd have to go and say something un-Arsenal-like and go and get a Zidane or just a winner in your dressing room.
I have to say, it's hard to imagine anyone else managing Arsenal. Like that, he has an identity over that. Whatever you think about Arteta, he is a personality on that sideline. Like he is representative of what the club is.
Yeah.
Another comment in there is like, if Evan Ferguson had scored a hat trick last night, Vinny, we would have
led with it.
I would say from mid November onwards, Troy Parrott is the most mentioned name in sport on our show.
Absolutely.
Comfortably. Yeah. But there's just so much to get through. So he scores a hat trick against Ajax last night in a 6-0 drubbing. Beautiful finish, one of the goals, long kick out from the goalkeeper. Takes on his chest, left foot past the goalkeeper. And a partnering comment here, Vinny, about Troy Parrott's future. And someone saying, please, for the love of God, stay in Alkmaar.
Yeah.
Stay what you're doing now. Don't fall into the temptation of going to a bigger club.
Yeah, that's all well and good. Like, do you know what I mean? If you work in, you work in one factory and a bigger factory offers you more money, will you go?
It depends how well you're doing at that factory.
Yeah, but sure. Yeah, I know. But look,
are you in favour of him staying, or do you think he should go if there's an opportunity?
I think to progress his career, like the difference. Okay. The difference is, if Evan scored a hat-trick last night, it's in Serie A, okay? Now, the Serie A standard, at certain points, is quite low compared to the Premiership, but it's still above Eredivisie, okay?
Uh-huh.
The difference last night, he's done against Ajax as well, okay? So he's done against a decent team. Troy is doing it in the Eredivisie, which is still a top league, but it's nowhere near the levels above. Very few players out of Eredivisie, outside the top three or four teams, are going even to championship clubs. Or they're paying big money for them. Styles as well is part of the reason for that. I'd like to see him do it at a higher level, whether that's in England or whether that's in Serie A or whether that's in La Liga. I'd like to see him do it at a higher level. But if Troy is comfortable being the best forward in, in Holland. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Like, yeah, if he's scoring international goals as well.
Yeah, like, well, no problem. But for his personal development, so yeah. We're looking at if true green tinted glasses. So yeah. Henrik Larsson was a great example of it. He was a star at Celtic, uh-huh. where people would question the Scottish League. But I'm sure there's people like him. He went to Barcelona and wherever. But so if a Premier League club comes in, Troy would probably double his wages. Double his wages. If he went to see somewhere like Everton, he'd double his wages.
Yeah. Okay.
So we can all comment on people and their lives and their careers.
Yeah.
And Troy is never going to be stuck for a few quid, right? Brilliant story as well and all of that stuff. He's only from around the corner here. So everything in life's not about money, but he's the potential to double his wages for a 5 or 6 year deal.
Yeah,
it's life changing for him, his family, his own kids and time or whatever, and his grandkids and all that stuff. So they're big life decisions. So
yeah,
sorry, Colin, but it's easy to say I'll just stay there and score lots of goals.
No, look, there's three reasons why a player would move. To get into your international side, not a problem for Troy. That's ticked off the box. To earn more money and to win trophies.
But test yourself at the next level.
Well, I suppose the trophies thing will coincide.
He's in no rush, though, is he? He's 23.
Well, look, the guy seems to be very happy. Right? Yeah. There's a lot to be said for being content. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm not suggesting he should move in this window or force him move in the summer. Yeah. Once he's happy, and if he's happy on that stuff, but the point I'm making is I wouldn't say he shouldn't move. Because there's loads of good reasons to see. Yeah. Imagine Troy Parrott scoring a hat-trick in a Premiership game. It's worldwide news. In England, him scoring the hat-trick last night is just, you know, just scouts in all the top clubs where that's come up on their alert system this morning, and now they're being, as part of their job, in the Championship and the Premiership clubs have reviewed, somebody's job is to review those three goals and then have another review into Troy and put that in front of the director of football and say, this is what he's doing.
Well, we have skin in this game, right? So we probably want Troy Parrott to stay where he is from an Irish perspective because you're confident and you're happy and you're flying it. Which brings me on to Evan Ferguson, right? So if he recovers from the kick up the hole and he's fine, no better, in no time. The good thing for Evan Ferguson is Roma lost without him at home to Torino the other night. And he's doing okay, I would say. He seems to be improving a bit. Is there a world then where you partner the boys up front?
Yeah, I mean, when Troy, at least one of the goals, if not, like, if you think of the winner Troy got in the last game, he was up front with Adam Eder at the same time. So,
is this when Johnny Kenny was on the pitch too? You know about the Hunger game?
Yeah. So, like, there's ways and means. Like, I think Troy and Evan to get like two of Troy's goals last night are real strikers finishing. I think he is developing into a more of a out and out striker. I think he's starting to develop. And that's just getting older. That's just more experienced people. Like Robbie Keane would have developed his traits at 21, 19, where Troy's are a little bit later, and that's down to game time as well, as much as anything. But absolutely, the two of them could and should, like. And we'll do it in a few weeks. Like, but I've had an in-depth look at Ireland's opposition in the two games, and I wouldn't be fearful of. It's not a two up front, but certainly, and the two of them like to get the ball to feet at different stages. Yeah. So we've seen Evan do that for Brighton. We've seen it do for Roma. He's played under two managers that want the striker to do that. I'm not suggesting Evan plays as a 10 for Ireland, but
yeah.
But that combination of knowing when to come in and when not to come in are different people. That it's absolutely doable.
Is there something to be said about having an impact off the bench?
From
Seems to be going that way, and that the bench is nearly as important.
It'd be crazy if Troy continues in this form. The only challenge we have with it is that the gap between the last game and the next game. I mean, if the game was next week or the week after the last game, then you. Like, Troy is in possession of jersey and you'd start him. But when you've got someone of the ability of Evan, you've got to get the two of them in the team together as best way possible.
Yeah.
And Ireland were quite capable of doing that. And again, we'll get into the Ireland chat in a few weeks' time. But you just think of playing a midfielder a little bit narrower.
Yeah.
And if you think of the way we play, so say you're Ryan Manning at left back, then your left winger plays a little bit narrower. and Ryan Manning plays forward when we have the ball, that allows Troy and Evan play together. So that's just, and that's part of the Irish current system, so it's not a radical change or anything. So
there are a couple of Irish players. How about the greatest Irish players, Vinny?
Oh yeah,
the greatest Irish 11.
I lost sleep over this last night, Colin.
In Premier League history. Yeah. And you're not as well rested as you otherwise would like to be because of this endeavour. See, it's hard naming an all-time Premier League 11, isn't it?
No, but there's one position. Well, there's two positions. If you think of our current problem, centre midfield is a problem.
Yeah.
Because Roy Keane is in there, but who plays with him? So everyone agrees on Shay Given.
What's your criteria? Do they have to have done their best stuff in the Premier League?
Premier League. Ronnie Whelan and all that stuff could play there and different things. But if you think of my back four, right, Colm, so Given and goal, back four would be Coleman, Richard Dunn. Bear with me for a second. I think I'm going to put Steve Staunton at centre half with Dennis Irwin. Okay?
Okay.
But that's because I'm going to go with McGrath and Keane in midfield.
Oh. Now, did McGrath play in midfield in the Premier League?
Well, he did for Ireland. This is I'd give out to you if you'd done this because it's the criteria, but I can't find another midfield to play in there. Now, I did think about this, so I'm going to reverse a little bit.
Yeah.
So if I go the other way and I play John O'Shea beside Roy Keane.
That's not a League Cup game.
I know, but hold on a second. This is my problem with what you call him. John O'Shea has won so many trophies. Yeah. John O'Shea has more Premier League medals than the rest of the Irish team together.
Yeah, why don't you put him
in
his position?
And you want to leave him out?
Put him in his position then.
I think I know the player you're thinking.
I know you do.
Yeah.
Don't put him centre mid.
There's no way I'm putting Stephen Ireland into this.
You just don't get football, that's fine. Put Stephen Ireland there, besides Roy Keane.
So can we all agree that Quinn and... We have to play two up front, Niall Quinn and Robbie Keane.
Why do we have to? Because it's our identity of 4-4-2?
Yeah, it's also suits.
Yeah.
Yeah, Quinn and Robbie.
Right. Yeah, no argument.
Duffer definitely is just
which
a shoe-in. See, this is the problem.
Yeah, you're going to put him out of position.
So I have him on the left.
Definitely on him.
Yeah,
on the
but
left.
Then if I put him on the left, right,
you have nobody on the right. You have and two candidates on the right.
It's breaking my heart to mention Jason McAteer on the right.
Yeah, Jason McAteer or Ray Houghton. And even then, Ray Houghton was kind of done by the Premier League.
You could put Stevie Ireland out in the right, no?
You could, Dara. I like that thinking. But I'm just not putting John O'Shea centre mid. No way.
So it is McGrath and Steve Staunton.
McGrath is an insult to the criteria of your game because I don't know if McGrath played centre mid for Aston Villa in the Premier League. Please tell me if he did. I'm happy to know if he did. But I know he played midfield for Ireland in the 80s, didn't he? And then eventually moved back. Yeah. But why don't you put John O'Shea in the fence instead of one of your defenders? John O'Shea centre back or left
instead
back?
Instead of Seamus Coleman?
Well, you could put him left back, could have been centre back. If he's that great. His Wikipedia is probably the best.
I just can't put my head at Dunny
because he'd give out to you.
Yeah,
because the golf course would be a bit awkward the next night.
Yeah.
I have no problem with Richard Dunn. He got Man City Player of the Year a couple of times when they were a bit of a rabble. He was keeping them all together with sellotape and sheer will, just like he was
Player of the Year Man City 7 years out of nine,
and Aston Villa when he went there as well.
Yeah,
I have no problem with Dickie Dunn.
To be fair, I think I put O'Shea ahead of Dunn but we can't clip that at any stage and no one can say.
Does Richard Dunn watch this show?
Well,
when you're on it, is it?
I don't know, but someone could send it to him.
Well, what would happen? Yeah. What would be the repercussions? He wouldn't talk to you?
No, he'd be alright.
Well, do it then.
No.
Do it. You can't put Donald Shea centre mid.
Can I ask you a question? We need to go, but I'll ask you a quick question. Is there anyone in the current team that will one day make that side?
Well, I was thinking Troy Parrott can't play here because he hasn't played in the Premier League enough.
Another boy, Evan could replace Niall Quinn in that team. Oof. If things continue to go to where they are.
I would say Caoimhín Kelleher maybe could replace Shay Given in time.
Oh yeah,
you have to go somewhere else.
Shay Given was magnificent.
Yeah.
I love Shay Given. Well, maybe that's a good question because we talk about the crisis of Irish football.
Colm, I never allowed to ask you this question. Most top five appearances for Irish players in the Premiership. We're always out of time when I ask.
We have to go, yeah. But I'll get back
without
to you about
Googling it.
Well, of course.
Even your listeners, it's so interesting that.
All right, well, let's get back to that, right? So hit us up on YouTube there. What is it?
Top five Premier League appearances by Irish people, okay? So, like, the obvious one, say given. So that, you know what I mean?
You want to give it to them?
So, no, just right. top one. That's he's right. the first. Okay, right, so the four under the.
And it's probably not as obvious as you think, is it?
There's one or two surprises.
I would have gone Roy, Robbie, Duffer, and maybe that's not necessarily the case.
Well, Roy Keane's not in it.
Roy Keane.
Ooh, there you go.
There you go, top five. That is no. No.
Off the ball, breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.